Well, as the nation ponders the implications of the rise of One Nation, we are going to take a trip down recent political memory lane now with Paul Strangio, Emeritus Professor of Politics at the School of Social Sciences at Monash University. Paul's new book is The Alchemy of Leadership, Seven Australian Prime Ministers in a Turbulent 21st Century. Paul, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks, Julian.
Now, Paul, why did you write a book about seven Australian Prime Ministers?
For a couple of reasons. Well, the first is, I suppose, that figure of seven prime ministers in a quarter of a century. So why? How do we account for the fact that we've had a revolving door prime ministership over the past quarter of a century? Is it that these seven, and particularly those following John Howard, haven't been up to the job? It's been their own fallibilities. Or is it something about the job itself that has changed, that it has made it so confounding? The second thing is, Julian, is that looking across the globe, I've become more and more persuaded that in the context of the long-standing debate about whether leaders, great men, make the world, or whether, you know, we're really just corks in the tide of history, of circumstances that individuals really don't have control. But when I look across the globe, I'm more and more struck that actually leaders, individuals, do make an enormous difference to the times. And so it's imperative for us to investigate leaders, to think about what makes leaders, their belief systems, their leadership styles, and how that plays out when they are leaders. So that's been a major imperative as well.
Yes, as you're right. Like it or not, leaders matter profoundly. So let's have a look at some of the themes that emerge from what really is a fascinating analysis of these seven prime ministers. One that surprised me, but actually does emerge as a very strong theme, is religion. Paul, you quote John Warhurst's observation that three of the seven leaders that Australia's had this century are prime ministers distinguished by their faith. Could you speak to that?
And that is fascinating. And the most striking, I'd note straight away, is Scott Morrison.
Mm.
Scott Morrison, and he emerges out of this book as, if you like, the most exotic, the oddest of the 21st Australian prime ministers.
Why is that?
I actually think he's quite alien to our political culture, and that is fundamentally, and I only really understood this when I read his prime ministerial memoir.
And that puts you in a very, very elite company because it didn't sell very well. I must admit, I wasn't aware that it had been released.
It sold in its hundreds. I hope my book sells better. But anyway, leaving that aside, Julian, what that book is a sort of a description of, you know, his prime ministership, but large slabs of it are scriptural passages. And what you understand there is that, you know, his faith is sincere and it's absolutely fundamental to what motivates him, what shapes him, how he performed as prime minister. And this is a faith, this an evangelical Christianity, Pentecostalism, that I think is quite alien to Australia and Australia's political culture, and if far more consistent with the North American flavour. And as I said, I think it shaped his prime ministership profoundly and many of the traits of that prime ministership. Because, for example, Scott Morrison believed, and he sincerely believed that he had a direct line to God, that he spoke to God. And the consequences of that are profound, because once you think you answer fundamentally to God, that allows for the sort of evasiveness that was so characteristic of his prime ministership. The belief that accountability to the public comes second, because foremost, he is accountable to God, his maker.
Mm, mm.
And it is a very strange book, But it is also a very enlightening book about, and I think, now that might, this might sound impertinent, but I don't think Morrison quite understood how revelatory that book is about himself. And there were just things in that that blew my mind. He doesn't mention, for example, you know, the Black Summer bushfires, doesn't mention robo debt. He doesn't mention the commandeering of the ministries because he's not answerable to them. Mm. They're between him and God. He says something along the lines, I'm not on it lying down here, you know, on a therapist's table. I'll keep that between me and God.
Well, there you go. Well, putting aside the sales, which we hope will be strong, of The Alchemy of Leadership, there could be a bit of a spike in the Scott Morrison memoir as well after that fascinating analysis, Paul. Of course, the other leaders whose religious beliefs have been very prominent are Kevin Rudd and Tony Abbott. And on that point, one of the quotes that you refer to consistently throughout the book comes from Weber, the firm taming of the soul as a quality of leaders. Could you explain that quote for us and how you apply it to the seven leaders that you look at in this new book?
Yeah, that quote, and it comes from Max Weber's 1919 essay, Politics as a Vocation. And I think it's a timeless essay, and there's so much wisdom in it. But this idea that one of the prerequisites of being a successful leader is a firm taming of the soul. And effectively, what does that mean? Well, emotional stability, temperamental stability. It's also, I think, linked to emotional intelligence. But it is that stability, that ability to, you know, drive through, to be indomitable, not get knocked off course. And I think the leader of the 21st century that stands out in that case is John Howard by Lee, of his own, because he had an almost superhuman capacity to remain stable, to learn. And a lot of this comes out of the fact I think it took him so long to get to the office, just like it took Anthony Albanese so long. They learn, they develop a harder skin, they develop a resolve, they develop a resilience. And it's a fundamental quality. But not all our prime ministers have had it.
Yes.
And I think Kevin Rudd stands out as the one who really lacked that firm taming
of
the soul.
Yes, indeed. And interestingly enough, he also is, as you describe it, the harbinger of the new compressed route to the prime ministership, becoming prime minister after relatively short time in parliament, although no one goes much shorter than Bob Hawke, of course. Mm. So tell us about your analysis of Kevin Rudd, particularly in terms of the firm taming of the soul.
Well, the thing with Kevin Rudd, and again, I'd go back to his memoir. It's a two-volume memoir. I wouldn't bother really for the second volume because it's really just an attempt to sort of blow up Julia Gillard and argue that case about who was right.
We've all been there before, yeah.
Right, the rivalry between those two. But the first volume about his early life, and particularly the sections on his childhood, are striking. They're moving, in fact.
Yeah, I must say that, yeah, just to hear exactly what Kevin Rudd and his family went through when he was young, it is very moving, and you can see how it could be so profoundly significant in terms of his psychology.
Yeah, profound. He had a very traumatic childhood because of the circumstances surrounding his father. His father was a troubled soul. There was strife in the family. Kevin was the last of the four. He was last of four children. He was the only one left at home when all these troubles were really coming to the surface. He witnessed violence in the family. He witnessed his father, you know, turning to alcohol. He was a womanizer, the father. And ultimately, one day he ran off the road in a car accident when he was drunk. And then Kevin and his mother watched the father die for 3 weeks in a hospital. And after that, there's all these flow-on effects in Kevin's life. He's farmed out to relatives. He boards at school. It's a very difficult childhood. He says a beautiful thing to in talking about his father. I don't know who my father was. I don't know who my father was. Now, again, I don't think, we need to be a psychologist to understand there was a profound scarring. I sense Rudd was rescued by his wife, Therese, as a young man, and his life is a triumph over adversity. He's a remarkable man, but I think those scars were there, and they played out when he was prime minister, because like so many prime ministers, Rudd has narcissistic qualities, but it's not a positive narcissism. There's a traumatic edge to it, a pathological edge almost to it, and I think how that played out was that sort of compulsion to control, that inability to share power with others. And I'd compare him to contrast him to Bob Hawke. He was also a narcissist. If you walked into the same room as Bob Hawke, you were burnt by self-love. so powerfully did it radiate. But Hawke was so comfortable in his skin, so comfortable, so loved as a child, he could share power. Whereas I don't think that played out with Kevin Rudd. So, again, I think we've got to be attentive to these things and be curious about them with our leaders.
Paul, the one leader who stands out for at least one reason in the seven is Julia Gillard, our only female Prime Minister. What's your assessment of her leadership and legacy?
Gillard's interesting. To be honest, Julian, she's the most difficult to get to know. To a large degree, Gillard is a closed book. And, in the book I try to go through the childhoods and sort of winkle out, the dynamics there. But with Gillard, it is difficult. And I think there's a pride to Gillard that shields herself. And that was a problem for her prime ministership. She wouldn't unbend herself publicly. And she famously said something like, I'm not a talk show host. I'm not a morning breakfast host. I'm the Prime Minister of Australia. She would get very frustrated when she was prodded about, revealing her inner self. And she's not a show pony. and in part that goes to the fact she's a woman. Men like to preen. Gillard was never like that. But I think that counted against her as a prime minister.
Even though, as you described, it was a very efficient and orderly government in terms of the number of bills that got through and those sorts of things. But at the same time, it didn't produce political longevity for Julia Gillard.
And the thing we can never leave aside with Gillard, the fact that she gave in to the sirens of ambition in 2010 and the issues around Rudd. They were profound, the issues around Rudd's dysfunctional leadership. But that act of tearing down Rudd catalysed dangerous forces in Australian politics, which played out for the next 8 years, 8 years of bloodshed. And I think it is true that Gillard was a victim of that action, that she catalysed a whole lot of things that then played out. Blood will beget blood. It's that classic case.
And indeed, in your analysis of the seven prime ministers, blood begets blood on both sides of the political aisle. Rudd, Gillard, Rudd, and then Abbott and Turnbull, very similar consequences for the right side of politics. Just finally, Paul, we haven't spoken much about Tony Abbott, but you do have a fascinating anecdote about Tony Abbott as a young man in the book. Could you quickly tell us that?
Yeah, there's this lovely story. It came out just when I was finishing the book, and it's a young woman in a sort of middle-aged woman. She's thinking back to when she was a child. Anyway, she was in a burning house in Sydney, and suddenly some young men appeared outside the house, and as she recalls it, one of them, you know, literally pulled the bars off the window to help save the children. And only more recently did she realise that one of them, that man pulling the bars off the window, was Tony Abbott. And I think it's a wonderful insight into this rollicking masculinist
ever
character.
The man of action, yeah, absolutely.
Ever the man of action. You know, as a child, he read books about great men in history. He was fascinated by them. He imagined himself in that way. Always had a worldview out of time, I believe, but there's that quality about him, and he's a tilter at windmills.
Hmm.
That's another thing, a really striking feature about Abbott's character.
Yes.
That he's always sort of, as I said, against the tide, and he's great. Political hero was B.A. Santa Maria.
And yes, Paul, unfortunately, we are going to have to leave it there. But as you say, so many prime ministers, so little time. It's absolutely fascinating stories. And I loved in particular the story of you ending up giving a conference paper where you went explored the childhood of Gough Whitlam, not knowing that it was going to be one person in the room who was none other than Gough Whitlam himself. I hope you don't find yourself speaking about this book in front of seven Australian prime ministers at once, Paul. But thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thanks, Julian.
Paul Strangio is Emeritus Professor of Politics in the School of Social Sciences at Monash University, and his new book is The Alchemy of Leadership, Seven Australian Prime Ministers in a Turbulent 21st Century.